Welcome to Career Tools. This week, phone screens. The questions this cast answers are, what is a phone screen? What should I expect from a phone screen? And how can I excel at a phone interview? So a phone screen, for those of you who've never had to have one, a phone screen is part of the hiring process, which comes after the hiring manager has reviewed your resume, so they've seen your resume, but before an interview. So there might be a phone interview or a face-to-face interview, but before those things, there is a phone screen. And the purpose of the phone screen is for the recruiter to narrow down the number of candidates to the number that will be interviewed. So say they've had a stack of 100 resumes and they've picked 20 people they like. 20 people that look like they have the right skills and experience, the right level of education, those kind of things. Now what they want to do is narrow those 20 down to a number that is reasonable for them to spend at least an hour with on a phone or a face-to-face interview. And that's usually 7 to 10, depending on the role and depending how many stages there's going to be. So they're practically halving their pile, usually. So what they want to do is check your basic details. So check where they've looked at your education and your experience. They just want to check that they've read it right or that they've understood properly what it is that you've done. Sometimes they check your salary intentions just so that they know that going forward with the process, you know, the role pays within what we were looking for. So you don't want to go through an entire process and then find out that their top salary is 30,000 less than the lowest number you'll take. So sometimes they check salary intentions there. And then finally, just to find out whether you have reasonable comprehension and communication skills. If you can't form a sentence, which sometimes I can't do on this podcast, but if you can't form a sentence, you can't reply to a question, you're not understanding the questions, then obviously the recruiter is going to screen you out. 95% of people pass this test, but it's there just to make sure. So even though phone screens are pretty basic, there's still an opportunity for you to really shine. And the message does get passed on. You know, when you've done a phone screen, you write notes for the hiring manager. This is the way I did it as a recruiter. I would do a phone screen, I would write notes for the hiring manager, and I would say, I really like this person. They're warm, they're friendly, they have great skills, they answer the questions very fluently, all those kind of things. So a hiring manager gets a stack of comments, and the hiring managers are influenced by those comments. So there is an opportunity for you to shine.
That's a great point, Wendy. Lots of people, I find, think that because human resources is doing this, not necessarily the hiring manager, there's less of that need to impress, per se. Mm-hmm. But again, this is one of those places, just another opportunity for you to showcase your skills.
Yeah. So, Sarah, will you do the outline for us?
Absolutely. So we're going to start, number one, by taking the phone screen seriously. Number two, getting set up right. And then number three, preparing what you'll say. And finally, displaying energy, displaying pleasantness to your interviewer.
Exactly. So we'll do some more explanation now about the goal of a phone screen from your point of view, from the candidate point of view. Some people bomb phone screens because they think of it as the be-all and end-all, like this is everything. If I pass this phone screen, I'll get the job, which isn't true. So they put a huge amount of weight on it. And the other people bomb it because they do what Sarah's just said. They don't take it seriously. They don't consider it part of the interview process. And so they take it too lightly, and then they're not able to answer the questions or do the things that we're about to tell you to do.
Right. So in a phone screen, really, all you have to do is convince the recruiter that you have the most skills required. Skills, abilities, traits, and characteristics, the things that they're looking for in the role. So, for example, if you needed a project manager who can deliver on time and on budget, and you can do that, and you tell them you can do that, then you can communicate reasonably, you're in.
Yeah, if you're a developer and you can describe a project where you develop something to a similar level to what they're about to do, and you did it successfully, and you can communicate that in a reasonable way, you're in.
No one thing that you say in a phone screen really is going to get you the job. In fact, almost nothing you say at all will get you the job. Apart from anything, the recruiter isn't thinking about hiring right now. They're looking for candidates to interview. He has different gates for you now that you need to go through at this stage than he will at the interview.
Yeah, the process of hiring or the process of being hired, I always think of as a series of hurdles, but the hurdles are all the same size. It's not like the phone screen is a really low one that you just have to hop over, and the face-to-face all-day interview is, you know, one of those things you have to climb up with a rope to get over. Because all of the hurdles stand in front of you and a job, or stand in between you and a job. So effectively, they're all the same size. So you wouldn't prepare less for this hurdle than you would for a face-to-face interview, just because it's short or you perceive it to be easy. You're still competing at this point to be the best person that the interviewer hears that day, or at least to be the best that you can be. And if you really want a fantastic new job, then you have to do the work for each stage. Because if you don't do the work for each stage, you won't get to the stage you want to, which is an offer.
So an example of that, many people think that it doesn't matter if they pick up immediately when that recruiter calls. So some people let it ring a little bit. The phone screen is going to be shorter than an in-person interview. The phone screen's almost always going to be 30 minutes, sometimes 15. It's rarely going to be as long as a 45-minute chunk of time. So what this means is that you have to be on your game right away. And being late for a phone screen, it's really the kiss of death. Because not only is being late a professional sin, but because every minute is such a large percentage of the time that you have available. Let's say, for example, you miss the recruiter's call. You call back. You apologize. That's a minute or two gone, which sounds really like nothing when you think about it. But it's probably reduced the time that you're answering actual questions by about a tenth.
Yeah, because by the time you've apologized and they said, that's okay, how are you today? And you've had that bit and he said, you know, I have your last job as this. And you've gone through the resume to make sure it's accurate and they've checked your address. And now he gets to the actual questions. It's probably only like 20 minutes. And so for every minute, that's, you know, every minute is a 20th of the time you have. It starts being much more important. So take phone screen seriously. And if you've listened so far, then I'm sure you're going to.
All right. Next, getting set up right. So we have the getting set up guidance on both phone and video interviews on our website in the interviewing series, but we're just going to cover the basics here.
There is free guidance on the website, but there's also some specific guidance in the interview series. So if you're interested in that, just go to the website and write in interview series in the search bar and you'll find it. So the first rule is no interruptions. And if you take a phone screen at work, at your desk, in a quiet, in inverted commas, corner, in the cafeteria, anywhere that is not your house, I've had people take phone screens on buses, or they'll be in the car and I'll say, I'm in the car, I'm driving, but it's all right, keep asking. And you're thinking, this is supposed to be a really important call and you can't stop, you know, to take the call. It seems actually you don't think it's terribly important.
As a matter of fact, at so many conferences, when we're talking about the location of the one-on-one meeting, when we say they don't need to necessarily take place in a private location, we get a lot of pushback because so many people come in and interrupt the one-on-one meeting if it's not in private. So you can think of it like a one-on-one, but a super important one.
Yeah, you definitely don't want to be interrupted. So in your house is the best place because it's the one place you can guarantee that you won't be interrupted. And it's one place that you can control ambient sound. So if you're in an office, even if you've got a private office and you've shut the door and you've written on no interruptions, the leaf blower man will go past the window outside because that's Murphy's Law. Or, you know, they'll suddenly decide that they're going to blast the air conditioning and that's going to make a noise that's distracting to you and probably not loud enough to really disturb the volume, but loud enough to be distracting. So things happen in environments where you're not in charge of everything. So your house is the best place to be. And you can control interruptions even if you have small children. And I know I don't have any children myself, but I have looked after small children. And I do know that, you know, they don't have long memories and they don't have any real conception of the fact that you're talking to someone else, but you can lock yourself in your bedroom or lock yourself in another room. If they're small enough, you don't have to lock it because they can't open the door because they can't reach. And tell everybody in the house you can't be disturbed unless the house is on fire, because that's the only good reason, right? I mean, if somebody else is looking after the children, hopefully they're not going to get into too much trouble. The other people in your house, you know, they're adults, they're not going to get into too much trouble. So only let them interrupt if the house is literally on fire, in which case we would like you to leave.
And I would also pay attention probably to time of day.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. If it's that time of the day when kids are coming home from school or dogs are barking or whatever it may be, don't do it then. Those are some interruptions you can't necessarily avoid.
That's right. Saturday morning when everybody decides to mow their lawn, try not to do it then. So the next point is use a landline, which everyone will now say we're dinosaurs, we're 400 and we don't understand millennials. Well, first of all, we don't believe in millennials. And it might sound archaic, but and cell phone, if you're old enough to remember when cell phones were new, which probably most of you aren't, they have improved enormously. It used to be that when your cell phone rang, your radio in your car made a noise because the waves interrupted each other. Even though VoIP has improved enormously, the landline, a solid line, still gives you the best call quality and the most secure connections. And we've all had that experience where we're on Wi-Fi or we're on Skype and it drops, or you can't hear someone, or it does that thing where the person sounds like they're on Doctor Who and it kind of repeats the sound a bunch of times. So you know that the quality isn't perfect. And some days it's not even great, depending on your internet connection. Internet connections seem to go down fairly regularly, if judging by the manager tool's text message when we say, my internet's down, call me.
Mine went down 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. So all of those things can happen. You know it happens. So a landline has none of those faults. So get a landline. And you can get one because nobody's buying them. I'm sure they're only $3 on Amazon. So get a landline.
All right. Number two, use headphones. When you've got headphones on, it allows you to gesture. Even though you can't be seen gesturing, it does make a difference to the conversation, right? You have that rapport that you can build. So next time you're on the phone, try it. So hold your hand still while you talk. You really can't, because gesturing is just an essential part of communication, just like speaking is. So you don't want to handicap yourself by only having one hand that you can use to speak. And in addition to that, two hands means that you can move your notes around in front of you so that you can get to the right piece quickly.
Exactly. I find that really, when we're recording, I have to keep my hands more or less still because otherwise I make noises and that sound engineer gets upset. And I find it so hard because I'm trying to talk and I need to use my hands.
Absolutely.
So the next one is stand up, but don't walk around. So when you stand up, the center of your body, the middle part between your hips and your shoulders is elongated and everything that's in there has the space that it's supposed to have. So your voice sounds fuller because it has more space and more air. And it's easier to modulate your voice when you've got your full lung capacity and your diaphragm can move and all those things. It's easier to change the tone of your voice or the pitch of your voice or the volume or the speed at which you're talking. So standing up helps you communicate more fully through the sound that you're making. But when you're standing, don't fall into the trap of pacing, because the swish of your shoes on the carpet or your feet on the carpet or your clothing can be heard on the phone. And people can absolutely hear that you're pacing. And depending on whether you're doing it slowly or fast, they draw conclusions about those things. And why would you have anything that distracts from what you're saying? That's the important thing. That's why you're having the phone screen. So don't pace. And if you are the kind of person who paces when they stand up, you might want to practice stopping doing that, or at least, I don't know, box yourself in, put two pieces of tape on the carpet so that it reminds you, don't pace.
You know what? I was just going to say that, Wendy, because I'm a pacer when I talk on the phone. So I would recommend practicing. So when you're talking to whomever, your friends, your family, whomever you're talking to on the phone, just practice standing, but be conscious not to walk around, because that's one of those situations. It's no fail, right? Yeah. Worst case scenario, you're talking to your friend. So
yeah, exactly. If you forget and you fail and you're talking to your friend, it doesn't matter. But if you, and it gives you that practice, because pacing is just one of those habits that we do. It's unlike our bodies to be still. And so we tend to pace. We tend to keep moving. So the final one of these is start early. And, you know, you might have your space all thought out and your landline ordered and your notes on your computer, and you get home 15 minutes before the interview and you're trying to print out those notes and get them arranged on your bed, and you're plugging the landline in and you're calling your mother to make sure that it works. And you know all of that stuff is going to go wrong if you're in a hurry, because it always does. Like, the printer always jams when you're 5 minutes before a meeting. Always. Again, it's Murphy's Law. And so you want to be in the space with your notes, with the phone, and you're sure it's working at least 30 minutes before you actually are going to be called or are calling the recruiter. Because, again, it's one of your no-fail situations, Sarah. If you're there and something goes wrong, you have time to fix it. If you're there and nothing goes wrong, you have time to look over your notes, to breathe slowly, to get in the mindset of answering questions and all of that stuff, and things will go swimmingly.
This was specifically when I did my manager tools interviews, but in my prep time, because I knew I would be standing and not sitting, I taped my notes to the wall.
Oh, that does stop you pacing too, right? Because you can right. only see them if you're close enough.
And it was right in front of me. I didn't have to muck with papers on a desk and search around. I pasted them all to the wall and kind of memorized where each sheet was. And so I had it in front of me. I could move my hands around. I didn't move. I felt like it worked perfectly.
That is a really good suggestion. Next time I need a job, I'll try that. Yeah. And how many phone interviews did you have for Manager Tools? Like 10.
Yes, I would say probably 10 with several different people, and it was a lot.
Yeah. We like to be picky.
Thank goodness for the interview series.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only good thing about applying at Manager Tools is we give you the answers.
Absolutely. And if you don't listen to them, there's a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we're about halfway through, so we'll continue next week.
If you enjoyed this podcast and you want the how-tos of management wherever you are, check out the free Manager Tools mobile app. It's available on both iOS and Android devices. Go to the Apple Store or the Google Play Store and download the Manager Tools app. Just search for Manager Tools in the respective store, or go to the Manager Tools website, www.manager-tools.com, and you'll find the links on the bottom of the homepage. Once you've installed the Manager Tools app, you'll have access to all the Manager Tools and Career Tools shows anytime, anywhere you want. With easy searching of podcasts by category, using the map of the universe, or using built-in search functions, it couldn't be easier. Additionally, if you're Manager Tools personal licensee, you'll have easy access to all the show notes right from the app whenever you want. Go to the App Store and download the Manager Tools mobile app. You'll be happy you did.